41. Houdini. With a click that he felt rather than heard, the tiny ratchet at the heart of the cable tie moved aside for Milgram's modified ballpoint clip. He sighed, enjoying a moment of unaccustomed triumph. Then he loosened the tie, without removing it from the bench's armrest, and slid his wrist free. Keeping his wrist on the rest, he looked around the park as casually as possible. Brown was nowhere to be seen, but there was the matter of the other three he'd glimpsed in Brown's room at the New Yorker, plus whoever else comprised Brown's red team. Why, he wondered, were such teams always red? Of tooth and claw, the teams of men like Brown. Seldom even blue, never green, never black. Past him moved a sunny afternoon's pedestrian traffic, across the width of the park. There were people here, he knew, who were playing at being here. Playing games. Brown's game, the game of the IF and those who worked with him. There were no police in evidence, he noted, and that struck him as odd, though in truth he hadn't passed this way for so long that he had no idea what sort of presence they currently chose to maintain. "It must have been defective," he said aloud, of the cable tie, rehearsing a line in the event of Brown's return before he could compose himself sufficiently to move away from this bench. "So I waited for you." Very large hands found Milgram's shoulders, pressed down. "Thank you for waiting," said a deep, measured voice, "but we aren't detectives." Milgram looked over at the hand on his left shoulder. It was enormous, a black man's hand, with pink, glossily polished nails. Milgram rolled his eyes, craning his neck gingerly, and saw, atop a vast bluff of button-studded black horsehide, a mighty black chin, perfectly shaven. "We aren't detectives, Mr. Milgram." The second black man, rounding the far end of the bench, had unbuttoned his heavy, cuirass-like coat, exposing a double-breasted black-on-black brocade vest and an elaborately collared satin shirt the color of arterial blood. "We aren't police at all." Milgram craned around a little further, to better see the one whose hands rested on his shoulders like 2-pound bags of flour. They were both wearing the tight woolen skull caps he remembered now from the laundry on Lafayette. "That's good," he said, wanting to say something. "Anything." Horsehide creaked as the second man settled himself on the bench, his enormous leather-clad shoulder touching Milgram's. "In your case, Mr. Milgram, I wouldn't be so sure of that." "No," said Milgram. "We've been looking for you," said the one with his hands on Milgram's shoulders. "Not very actively, we'd be first to admit. But once you'd borrowed that young lady's telephone to contact your friend Fish, he had that number on call display. Fish, being a friend of Mr. Birdwell, phoned him immediately. Mr. Birdwell phoned that number. He social engineered the lady, who anyway suspected you of having tried to steal her phone, you understand? Are you following me so far, Mr. Milgram?" "Yes," said Milgram, feeling an irrational but very powerful urge to put the cable tie back on as though that would magically reverse the flow of events, taking him back to the uneventful park of a few moments before, seeming now a very paradise of security and light. "We happened to be nearby," said the one beside him, "and drove to Lafayette, where we found you. Since then, as a favor to Mr. Birdwell, we have been observing your movements, Mr. Milgram, awaiting an opportunity to speak with you in private." The hands on his shoulders grew abruptly heavier. "Where is that cop-looking motherfucker you always with, Mr. Milgram? Drove you over here?" "He's not a cop," Milgram said. "He didn't ask you that," said the one beside him. "Whoa," exclaimed the one behind. "Old white man just decked that boy out the cuts." "Thief!" shouted a man from the direction of the Green Market. "Thieves!" Milgram saw movement there. "This place is supposed to be gentrified," said the man beside Milgram, as if offended by the disturbance. $2 million a unit here." "Shit," said the one behind, letting go of Milgram's shoulders. "It's a bust." "He's DEA," shrieked Milgram, lunging forward, his worn leather soles slipping nightmarishly, like feet in some ancient animation, one in which the gate of the projector is jumping, or a very, very bad dream. And part of that dream, as he ran, was that he was still holding before him, as if some tiny sword, his painfully honed Houdini key.